friends. Hope you're having a wonderful day. Welcome back to Technology Now, a weekly show from Hewlett-Packard Enterprise where we take what's happening in the world and explore how it's changing the way organizations are using technology. We're your hosts, Aubrey Lovell.
And Michael Bird.
In this episode, we are looking at how the public sector is embracing the hybrid cloud model and what steps need to be taken to be certain our information as members of the public is kept safe. It's a big issue. In 2021 and 2022, the largest percentage of cyber threats and attacks were reported by governments and the public sector, according to the European Parliament. Yet when it comes to cybersecurity, public services have much smaller available budgets than multinational corporations or finance companies.
So what operational security strategies are being tailored for public sector needs? How does regulation differ between the public and private sector when it comes to hybrid cloud security? And how can leaders in health, education, the military, public transport, and law enforcement ensure that adopting a hybrid cloud model is a secure option?
So if you're the kind of person who needs to know why what's going on in the world matters to your organization, this podcast is for you. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to your podcast app of choice so you don't miss out on all the great conversations. All right, Michael, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's get into it. So migration to the cloud has been a hot topic in the public sector globally, but it's not been without controversy.
Indeed, because in 2013, for example, here in the UK, the government announced its Cloud First policy. The decree was that public sector organizations should default to public cloud first. Other solutions should only be used where that wasn't possible. By the end of the decade, the cloud-only policy had been looked at again. And whilst the government's head of technology at the time wrote, quote, "It is not being revised, reissued, or renamed," those words appeared on the government website, which also had the subheading, "Organizations understand cloud first is not cloud only." The public sector contains vital private information that needs to be kept secure, so you can forgive a little wiggle room as new solutions come to light. After all, according to the UK Parliament website, the UK is the third most targeted country in the world for cyber attacks after the US and Ukraine. And in August 2023, tens of millions of British voters had their details compromised after the Electoral Commission was hacked. That attack went unnoticed for more than a year.
And that's just one example. So how is the hybrid cloud model protecting the public from the same thing happening again and happening elsewhere in the world? And how is the public sector doing it? To fill us in on hybrid cloud security is Simon Leach, Director at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise's Center of Excellence for Cybersecurity and Digital Risk Management.
Thanks for joining us on the show, Simon. So Simon, when it comes to the hybrid cloud and the public sector, what are the security challenges?
There's statistics out there that show the average cost of a data breach is around about $4.5 million. And that number is consistent whether we're talking about private or public sector organizations. Cybercrime is a massive problem for everybody. So when I talk about the challenges, I like to split them into two sides, right? So on the one side, we've got the environmental challenges. This is things like the requirement for public sectors to use multi-generational IT. They've got some older legacy applications that have been around for a long time, but they're also adopting newer technologies, for example, cloud-based applications, and they need to be cognizant of the control that they have to provide over both these legacy and newer applications. We also need to be aware of some of the issues that we have with hybrid cloud around both data gravity, so where your data lives, and data sovereignty, the need to keep that within specific boundaries. But we also have to be aware that we've still got the requirement for applications to be on-premise. Some of the research we've done ourselves has shown around about 70% of workloads still exist on-premise. So whilst talking about cloud and hybrid cloud is a nice idea, it doesn't always suit every single workload. So that's from the environmental challenges perspective. But then on the other hand, we've got what I refer to as the organizational challenges. Public sector organizations are very often short on budget, as are many organizations, but this often plays more of a role in the public sector. Because of that lack of budget, they don't always have the most up-to-date systems, security controls, and they also experience a skills shortage. And then they've got a different level of accountability compared to a private sector organization. They're accountable towards the public because they're typically looking after their information, And they're also accountable back towards the government. And then finally, we've got a pretty major impact from regulation.
Okay, so talk to me about regulation, please. Does the public sector differ from private?
I think luckily there are actually a lot of similarities between the regulation that public and private sector organisations are faced with. So if we look at some of the regulations, take the EU specifically, we compare something like DORA, which is the Digital Operational Resilience Act, which is applicable to financial entities in the EU. And then we look at NIS2, which is the latest regulation to come out of the EU and ENISA, which is applicable to public sector organisations. They both have very similar characteristics. So they both require organisations to put in place a documented security architecture. They both require organisations to have an approach to risk management that is understood by the board of directors. They both expect organisations to have incident response plans in place and to be sharing threat intelligence with one another, and also to manage the risk in their supply chain. So in terms of, you know, these similarities, this is a really positive thing because it means we can all work towards the same sort of goals. But there are some differences. Very often the regulations require an organisation to follow a specific cybersecurity framework, whereas in the private sector, it's much more about following best practices or good enough practices. And this is because of the priorities and the objectives that these different organizations have. So back to the level of accountability that I mentioned in the earlier question, being compliant is in the public interest for a public sector organization. But when we look at a private sector organization, it's very often designed with the shareholder or the customer in mind. And then I think another difference is the level of collaboration that takes place between the two industries. From a public sector perspective, collaboration is really important. Again, going back to the lack of budget, the lack of resources, if you can share information with another government agency, either in the same country or in a different country, then you get access to a lot of information. But from a commercial perspective, that's often seen as giving away commercially important secrets, right? So they're not often as open to sharing that sort of information.
Who is being targeted by cyber attacks in the public sector?
There's an old saying, right? You know, why do people rob banks? That's because where the money is. And we've got the same thing here. So public sector organizations are responsible for protecting the information of their citizens. But in many cases, they're also responsible for protecting the critical infrastructure that holds our countries together. So the cyber criminals see basically leverage in those environments. They see an opportunity to cause disruption. And by causing that disruption, they see an opportunity to make money or generate revenue for themselves. And they know that public sector organizations have money, maybe not as much as a financial organization, but they also see that there are often more weaknesses in those public sector organizations because they don't have the same budgets to protect those organizations as some of the higher profile targets, such as a financial institute. So it really comes down to the opportunity to cause disruption and make money.
So who's responsible for protecting the public sector?
I think the responsibility question and the associated accountability question is really important when we're having discussions about putting data, information, and applications into a cloud environment. Because too often I hear from customers the opinion that when we transfer a workload to a cloud provider, it becomes the cloud provider's responsibility to protect that data for me. It's important to understand how the shared responsibility model fits together when you're outsourcing applications to a cloud, and remember that the overall accountability is going to remain with your organization. So as an example of this, if a public sector organization decided to put a workload in a public cloud, and for whatever reason that workload got breached, the public sector organization cannot turn around to their customers or the public and say, yeah, we're sorry we got breached, but it wasn't our fault. It was the cloud provider's fault. Because ultimately, it was up to the department head or the director or the CEO of that public sector organization to do the appropriate due diligence, understand the risk that was involved with putting that workload under the management of a public cloud provider, and accept the responsibility for anything that may have gone wrong because of those decisions that they made. That understanding of responsibility and accountability is really important. And it's really important to understand where those responsibilities in the contracts exist.
So, Simon, how can the public sector get around a lack of budget when it comes to cybersecurity?
So I think this is a challenge for every organization. But the way I always advise to look at that is to get a very good understanding of your risk exposure. Because a lot of organizations today have pumped a lot of money into purchasing security controls to protect their business because they were the next big thing. You know, vendors started to introduce next-gen firewalls. So we all went out and bought next-gen firewalls instead of traditional firewalls. And vendors started to introduce EDR. So we all went and replaced our AV solutions with EDR. And not to say that either of those are bad technologies, because they're definitely really important parts of any organization's cyber architecture. But what we do have to understand is, what are the risks that we're trying to protect our organization against? And what are the controls that we can use to reduce those risks and to reduce the threats that impact those risks? And only once we understand that will we really get a clear picture of where we should be investing to protect our organization. And that will really help us to align our expenditure with where the risk exists and where the threats exist. Additionally, once we've determined what we need to spend the money on, we need to find the best way to spend that money. And whilst there are lots of great commercial solutions out there, in many cases, there are also good open source solutions. Also, many commercial organizations will offer special pricing deals to government entities or to public sector entities. So it's worth investigating those as well to see if you can get any special pricing to help with the budget. Then there's also a lot of stuff that we can do that improves our security without costing us money. So things like building a security culture within the organization can really help. Creating appropriate policies for things like acceptable use, team member security policies, all these kind of things will play a big role on helping the organization to become more resilient.
Thanks so much, Simon. Absolutely fascinating. And we'll be back with Simon Leach in a moment, so don't go anywhere. All right, it's time for Today I Learned, the part of the show where we take a look at something happening in the world we think you should know about. And Michael, I believe it's your turn.
It is. Now, did you know that there are between 10 and 50 billion potential habitats in our galaxy, Aubrey? Did you know that?
I did not.
Well, this is according to the man behind the US-based organization SETI, S-E-T-I, or Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Now, 10 years ago, this may have not qualified as legitimate Technology Now news, but in the age of AI, it's a very real issue because AI's ability to handle massive data sets and to spot anomalies means that the search for existence on other planets has taken one giant leap. You're welcome. SETI is building an AI model to work with the US National Radio Astronomy Observatory in New Mexico. The observatory's core facility, Very Large Array, has 28 giant 25-meter, or about 82 feet, antennas spaced out across a desert plain. When the AI model was built, it was able to process all of its captured data at a staggering 2 terabytes every second. Wow. So we may be able to find life on Mars all the more easily. Now, on the subject of Martians, scientists believe that a Sherlock instrument on NASA's Perseverance rover, which has been collecting samples from the planet's Jezero crater, has detected organic compounds that glow under ultraviolet light. So, you know, there you go. Just a casual drop-in line about a potentially groundbreaking discovery at the end there. No biggie?
Yeah, no biggie. Just life elsewhere outside of Earth. You know, lots to think about. Very interesting, though. Thanks, Michael. Okay, now it's time to get back to this week's guest, Simon Leach, to talk more about hybrid cloud and the public sector.
So, Simon, how can leaders in the public sector secure the supply chain and mitigate associated risks?
The challenge with supply chain security is that this is really the only area of mitigating risk that is outside of your direct control. So, as a public sector organization, it's really important for you to understand the risks that are involved in working with a particular third-party supply chain partner. And very often, the most simple way of doing this is by asking them, making sure that you're performing compliance evaluations on a regular basis, asking supply chain partners to prove to you through demonstrating attestations or certifications that they've achieved themselves, so that you really understand what sort of risk they're introducing to you. Now, that doesn't mean we should just ignore all of the security controls that are in place. But what it does do is it provides us, again, an understanding of the risk and then possibility to prioritize that risk so that we can make sure that we're spending the money in the right place to reduce that third-party supply chain risk.
Why should the rest of our organizations be looking at how the public sector are approaching these challenges?
The public sector does do a very good job of dealing with reduced budget. So there's a lot that can be learned from that perspective, a lot that can be learned in how they work together across different public sector organizations to share information with one another, and a lot to be learned with the type of attack vectors that they are faced with. So nation-state-sponsored attacks, for example, will very much focus against public sector organizations. But there's no reason that those state-sponsored attacks wouldn't move over to the private sector, and in many cases, they already have. So really taking a look at the best practices that industry bodies such as ANISA in the EU and NIST in the US share, and understanding the information and the guidance that is being provided to those public sectors can play a really big role for private sector organizations as well.
Thanks so much, Simon. It's been great to talk to you. And you can find more on the topics discussed in today's episode in our show notes.
Right, we're getting towards the end of the show, which means it is time for This Week in History, a look at monumental events in the world of business and technology, which has changed our lives. Now, Aubrey, what was the clue last week? Please remind me.
So the clue last week was, it's 105 AD. Take some paper and write that down. Did you get that one?
No. Some of them I do. This one I didn't. I was completely clueless.
I didn't either. But it was, of course, the invention of modern paper. Oh. Duh, obviously.
Okay.
This week in China, 1,919 years ago.
Gosh, okay.
Pretty amazing. The process was invented by Cai Lun, who showcased it to the emperor. It departed from traditional paper sources by using cheap, easy to process, and readily available wood. And we know the exact date it happened because upon showing it to the emperor, court scribes wrote down the interaction along with its date. Smart thinking. The process immediately kickstarted a paper industry in China, which made writing much more common and widely available, though it would take several hundred years for the rest of the world to catch on. Pretty amazing.
Wow. Yeah, it really is. Okay, next week, the clue is, look sharp, in 1931, this invention created a buzz. Aubrey, any ideas? Don't give anything away, but any ideas?
I actually think I know this one, but I'm not going to say anything.
Do you know what? I think I do too. Right. That does bring us to the end of Technology Now for this week.
Thank you to our guest, Simon Leach, director at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise's Center of Excellence for Cybersecurity and Digital Risk Management. And to our listeners, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Technology Now is hosted by Aubrey Lovell and myself, Michael Bird. And this episode was produced by Sam Datapoulin and Al Booth, with production support from Harry Morton, Zoe Anderson, Alicia Kempson, Alison Paisley, Alyssa Mitri, Camilla Patel, Alex Podmore, and Chloe Suwell.
Our social editorial team is Rebecca Wissinger, Judy Ann Goldman, Katie Guarino, and our social media designers are Alejandra Garcia, Carlos Alberto Suarez, and Ambar Maldonado.
Technology Now is a Lower Street production for Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, and we'll see you at the same time next week.